So, yeah, like I said, you are very much welcome to join me here on the Five Rings of Spun Fun program, a name that I kind of, I took the Five Rings symbol away from the IOC because they weren't being responsible. They, you know, we're lying about bribes, whereas I tell the truth. Bribe me, I'll accept right off of the bat, wide open for whatever you want to pay. Paywall, it doesn't necessarily mean that I'll do what you want me to, but I'll vote for you. Anyways, what should I do now? Well, what I like to do for listeners out there, and it's starting to catch on a little bit, which is kind of nice to hear feedback from people when I bump into them on the street and such. Give me feedback about the program. But it's even better when listeners like yourself hear the program and dial. Yeah, I know, it's a voice answering machine, voice mailbox. Leave a message on there. Go through the, the rigmarole to get a message on there. Leave a message and comments what you thought about this program. We don't, write down your phone number or anything like that either. But it is definitely, we're interested in hearing what the audience has to say, especially about, programming, which I like to call the Nightly Mix. Here on CFUV, and let's just give you a sample. What is the Nightly Mix like? It is commentary, social commentary, the social vent to it, social commentary mixed in with music, and I hope you enjoy.
Hi, I'm just going to give a little, kind of an advertisement of something happening. Many of you might be aware, and somebody was just passing out pamphlets, that the World Trade Organization is having a huge ministerial conference in Seattle at the end of November. And for those of you that don't know, the World Trade Organization is a large bureaucratic nightmare run by corporate elite and ministers of trade from around the world, which is a completely undemocratic process to give corporations citizens' rights so that they can sue countries for unfair business practices which hurt their profits. One of the things they're doing for the World Trade Organization is resurrecting the multilateral agreement on investments that was supposedly defeated about 3 years ago. That's being revamped and brought into the WTO. One thing that's happened with the WTO is the state of Massachusetts refused to do business with any corporation that traded with Burma because Burma has abysmal human rights record. The WTO ruled that it was unfair to those corporations' profits for Massachusetts to pass that law, so they were required to do trade with countries trading with Burma. And people estimate that if this World Trade Organization had been around 10 years ago, then apartheid would still be a reality in South Africa today. There would have been no sanctions against South Africa. So they're coming to Seattle November 29th to December 3rd, and November 30th down in Seattle, they're hoping to get 100,000 people out into the streets to the World Trade Organization, as well as a general sick-in and shutdown of the city for that day by labor. And for those of you that are unable to make it to Seattle, there's going to be stuff happening here, so keep your eyes and ears peeled for posters and stuff on CFUV and whatnot, because lots of people won't be able to go. Yeah, here we go. Victoria's response to the World Trade Organization. They're Saturday, November 6th, 1 to 5 p.m. at First Metropolitan Church, which is just over there, 932 Balmoral at Quadra. This is the Council of Canadians is putting that on. And then on November 30th, I'm sure there's going to be stuff happening here in town to go along with the stuff happening in Seattle. So, yeah, World Trade Organization has to be shut down, and everybody's got to do something about that, because they don't want to just make people poor, but countries too. All right.
Thanks, Kirk. Next up is Mike Willoughby.
I don't know what the relevancy to what I'm about to say is, and it'll probably piss most people off, but the only true freedom we shall ever have is anarchy. That just seems to be the way I feel. And the only way we're ever going to get rid of poverty is to get rid of money. What created all these things that oppress us is our own society that we have created. It's BS, and we must do something about it. There's nothing wrong with working together, but I don't know. Oh well, thanks anyway.
Thanks, Mike. Next up is Abbas Mohammadi, a member of the Canadian Auto Workers and a representative. works on the Victoria Labour Council and various other organizations, and has always been a great supporter of our actions.
Thank you. Well, I guess I was kind of expressed through other speakers. Bobby Arvis explained my feeling when you're in need and when you're facing the system. And I've been there a few times, like being unemployed. I never lost my spirit. I didn't think it was my fault. I took some courses. They provide you with courses, and they teach you when you go and apply for a job, how to sit on the, you know, chair, and how to speak, how to present yourself, how to put your resume together. It's all bullshit. They're trying to tell you that it's your fault. If you do that, if you appear like that, if you've got that resume professionally done, you know, cost you $100 or whatever, then you get a job. It's bullshit. What I did was, I put my backpack on and I went to Mike Harker's office in Vancouver, and I said, there was a man in there looking like a working man, you know, and that, you know, and told me what could he do for me. I said, I need a job. He said, oh, you go to unemployment office there, you know. I said, look, I'm not stupid. I know that. I need a job. He said, what do you mean? I said, I'm a tradesperson. I know things to do. I've been in construction for many years, and I'm a certified welder and all that. So I need a job. He said, if there is no job in that field, you go and do some training and that. I said, well, what do you want? You know, this is a class one driver's license in BC, in British Columbia. I'm allowed to drive any vehicle that can move on the earth, on the ground, by BC. You know, it's not, because, you know, when you move from one province to another, they give you all kinds of trouble. You have to do that and that. Well, I said, this is BC. Okay. And I've got, this is, by the way, my A-level welding certificate. What do you want me to do?
So what you want me to do? So what you want me to do? So what you want me to do? So what you want me to do? So what you want me to do? So what you want me to do? So what you want me to do? So what you want me to do? So what you want me to do?
Okay, if you have a job lined up for me and you pay for me to go and take a course, and after I finish the course, I'm working. So I don't mind that. Otherwise, so while I'm unemployed, you treat me like everybody else, because it's not my fault that I'm unemployed. It's yours. You're governing this, you know, society. You're in charge.
So what you want me to do?
Well, he couldn't come up with any answer. You know, he said, well, you know, the government is visiting Japanese and American investors, means capitalists, to come and invest and get you employed. I said, this is bullshit. They don't want to face me. They go to places that if people argue with them, if they try to organize themselves, they simply shoot them. That's where they go and invest. They don't come here to invest to face me and workers like me who know part of their rights, you know, and they can stand for themselves. Anyway, that was a good experience, and I wanted to share that with unemployed, that it's not your fault. It is their fault, and Bobby said that, you know, Bobby said that, you know, when you go to an office, to a government office, you are the boss of this society. That's the way you look at yourself. You're a member of this society, and those people over there, the government, are there to serve you. That's what they tell you when they want to ask for your vote, don't they? They're there to serve you. Well, when you go there, you demand that you're going to be served. Anyway, I'd like, also I'm a member of International Federation of Iranian Refugees. We've got branches in 40 cities around the world. And what we do is we reflect these kind of activities, and we attach ourselves to people like you, to the working people, to the socialist people, to the progressive people, to organized labor, to people who want to do some positive changes. They want to establish a different world that people people counts, not the money. The labor, the work, the thought, the contribution, positive contribution work, not the money, not the capital, not, you know, these all these paper bullshit that they do and screw us. You know, I don't know if I can be any longer, can I? Okay, one other criticism I've got to this society is they call it a free market or freedom, you know, free society, free world, you know, when it comes to to compare it with another society, basically where the workers have the rights, where women have the rights, where there is freedom for people and people have the control of means of production. They say, well, these are communist, socialist, in a manner that they are bad. They are they are not democratic. This is democracy. Okay, well, I want to tell you that this is not democracy. Why? Because I cannot go to Save on Food or Thrifty or Safeway and pick up whatever I want and tell them, okay, I want to pay $10 for that. Oh, that's the kind of freedom, isn't it? But they don't let me. But when it comes to our goods, you know, the owner put the price on it and check it and everything, and they've got security guards, you know, prisons and everything to get you if you don't obey their rules and their prices, what they ask for. But when it comes to us, the working people, even if you're organized and we have unions and all that, when we say, this is my price, this is the tag price for my work, for my labor, they put us in jail. If you resist to work, you go on a strike and you stop, you know, in front of your workplace and they say, I don't want to work, they take you to jail. But those bastards, the owners of those big giant, you know, companies, nobody put them in prison if they don't sell you, you know, what you need for nothing or for some money that you know, like offered to them. This is not the same situation, you know. We're not in the same situation. Majority of us are forced to take whatever it is, like in our last contract, you know. What did we get? You know? Nothing. 0, 0, 1 or whatever, you know, that kind of thing. But they price their goods. They have the right to do so. I also have a bad news for you, and that is to warn you, and I hope that some of you can do something about it, perhaps reverse the situation or something. That is to learn the power. That is to do with a service that many of you people, many of working people, poor people use, and that's busy transit. We've got a fare system now that you get on the bus, you got either a transfer or you pay some money in there, and the bus driver checks the money, you know, how much you're supposed to pay and how much you paid, and push the button, you're gone. You know, if you're 10 cents short, maybe, you know, the driver has the authority to, you know, tell you, okay, you can pay next time when you get on the bus, or you tell them you're shorted, you know, 50 cents or whatever, you can deal that. Depends on the, you know, personality of the person and understanding of that person and all that. But from pretty soon, there would be a different fare box on the bus. It shows exactly how many pennies you put in there. And it's not only up to the driver to control that. Everybody else on the bus would see how much you pay, and probably they would say, hey, bus driver, how come you don't, you know, how come he's short or whatever, you know? And it's only against the poor people, the people who cannot probably afford to pay, you know, the fare back, you know, the bus fare. And it's a shame. I don't think it's a good idea. I think the good idea is to establish a system that everyone, I think, you know, transport should be everyone's right. Everybody should get a free ride. Like, I mean, you know, it should be, it's essential service. You know, we would have cleaner environment, less, you know, cars on the road, you know, less danger, you know, and all that. And everybody can get from A to B, everybody's secure. I go for that.
The next request is from Kirk Hawken.
My name is Bobby Arbus. I'll be speaking for Kirk. The proposed bylaw has been rationalized by its proponents as a necessary measure for mitigating against the perceived risk of potential violence against members of the community by people panhandling. It's ironic that the focus has been on the violence of the poor, when poverty and the bylaw itself are expressions of a systemic violence against the most vulnerable and disadvantaged members of the community. The stereotyping of poor people as violent, of suspect, perpetuates and covers up the real violence that exists in our society, which is more about the social and economic forces that create poverty and drive people into the streets, and which is constant than it is the odd incident in which a panhandler and a pedestrian may happen to clash. It's an all too typical display of class privilege and power that well-adjusted, comfortable, middle-class counselors are enacting a bylaw to further dispossess street people of the little they do have. It is appalling that the middle-class preoccupation with comfort and safety and the irrational fear of the poor be allowed to override the basic rights of marginalized people in our community. Bob Cross has argued that the downloading of cuts in federal government transfer payments has been felt the hardest at the municipal level of government. Well, if the municipality is feeling hard hit, you can imagine how the street community is feeling it. The cuts in federal transfer payments affect the most disadvantaged and disenfranchised members of the community, namely people without income, people without jobs, people without housing, people with disabilities, people without basic support services, people who've fallen through the holes in our tattered social safety net. Restricting and licensing panhandling amounts to further disadvantaging the disadvantaged and penalizing the poor for being poor. This bylaw is an insensitive and cowardly action which amounts to kicking people who are already down, something my mother told me I should never do as a decent human being. Again, it's ironic that such well-to-do people can be telling homeless people that they have too much, that they should be willing to make sacrifices, that they should be restricted, that they are the problem. I propose that it is the affluent in our community who have too much. It's the more privileged that need to be making sacrifices for the benefit of the less privileged. And it is the poor-bashing intolerance of Mayor Cross and Councillors Young, McLean, Hughes, and Lunt and their fearful bourgeois constituents that are the problem. And ultimately, it is the planned inequities of the capitalist system that is the problem, which we are all too quick to deny. It's all too easy to blame the abysmal failures of capitalism on the casualties of the system. As community representatives, you should be confronting the roots of injustice instead of lazily recycling injustice. Finally, the bylaw will undoubtedly invite more police harassment of people in the street community. The proponents of the bylaw have expressed dire concern over the safety and security of some people who perceive themselves to be at risk from, quote, aggressive panhandling. However, incidents of aggressive panhandling are indeed far and few between compared to the incidents of police harassment and brutality routinely visited upon the homeless and other, quote, undesirables in our community. Homeless people are
Your time is up, sir.
I would like to finish my thought, because it's actually the first time I've ever spoken in City Hall.
I'm sorry, and to be fair, we'll ask you to conclude now so that others may speak.
Homeless people are at constant risk of violence, not only from police, but from just the exposure and vulnerability of living in the streets. My parting thought is try sleeping in the streets for a night. For a week, a month, a year, for 5 years, for 10 years. And then come back and tell me who's more at risk, whose safety is really an issue.
The next speaker is Ben Izzet. Next speaker is Shane Calder.
I actually would like some cheering. It kind of gets the stale air out of here. And I think that the people who have come here today have a moral obligation to oppose this bylaw. And if you're going to shut down this meeting because people cheer, then we'll come to the next one. And then we'll come to the next one. And if you want to keep on shutting them down and keep on shutting them down, because of the only way people can actually dissent against a heinous and disgusting bylaw, then we'll come back and come back and come back, and there's not a thing you can do about it. But primarily, I'd like to address two of what I found to be the main arguments in support of a bylaw. First was fear, perceived fear, and two was the lack of revenue that would come into Victoria due to a tourist running in fear of our poverty. First off, I think it's been clear on both sides that there has been a perceived fear. I think both sides of this argument would agree that fear does play an element in this. And I would suggest that fear of youth, fear of poverty. Fear of poverty. I have a big fear of poverty, actually, personally. And I can understand that. I think it speaks to something a little bit more systemic in our culture, rather than just. That being so, I would suggest that there needs to be a real commitment by this council to address those systemic problems. I personally don't believe that fear, perceived fear, and a fear that hasn't even been, I believe, to this point, accurately documented either. You know, we don't have the fear manual or the field, you know, like the report on fear, or, you know, at least this doesn't exist, you know. These things aren't there, but we continually have people coming up saying there's this fear, people don't like panhandlers. So I would think that that's an interesting point. You know, why is that? And I think that if this, and I've noticed from the last meeting that some councillors spoke in terms of social justice and cooperation and getting along, there needs to be a deeper commitment to issues of social justice. And where does that fear really come from? I don't believe a bylaw of this argument. I think it's completely silly. The second is the crushing lack of revenue that Victoria is going to face, that our main industry here, tourism, is just going to crumble. You know, Babylon will fall. And I have to say, I think this is also foolish. I'm born and raised in Victoria, and I've seen a real growth here. Although youth unemployment is 25% here, Victoria broke $1 billion last year in as was stated last time, in tourist revenue. This is a record. And it was projected that would go up to $2 billion, you know. And I would suggest also that the majority of the people who come to visit Victoria come from places where poverty and specifically panhandling is considerably more apparent than in a gentrified city like Victoria. And the notion that panhandlers are actively chasing away tourists, I don't believe stands to reason, and I feel that it doesn't even stand up to the stats. So I'm curious to know really the root behind the argument for a panhandling bylaw. Am I running out of time there? Okay, how much time do I have left? I'm there? Oh, well. How about a chair?
Let's keep going with this theme I've got cooking here, poverty, human rights.